Aryan Resistance Radio Network here on Thursday. That's right, right here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your donations for the radio show and for other projects like helping some of the prisoners out. The POWs, the ones that are deserving, that is.
Cool. Norse God of Thunder. A fearless warrior who protects his people from monstrous giants. He was the idol of Vikings and barbarians in the darkest age ever known to man. But few know the reality behind his myth. He battled the ancient world's most colossal sea monster. And he was the last hope for Europe's pagans as they defied the armies of Christendom. Fact and fiction collide in the myth of the mighty Thor. Two arch enemies battle to the death. Thor, the thunder god, against a staggering beast. A giant snake who strikes with lethal force. It is man versus monster. Thor unleashes his deadliest weapon, lightning from his magic hammer, as thunder rocks heaven and earth. The myth of Thor is filled with these epic showdowns, heroic battles against creatures who threaten mankind.
Thor is the champion of the gods. He is the great fighter who can be brought out when something is really bad. You don't go to Thor for wisdom. Go to Thor because he's going to protect you against the evil monsters.
Well, it looks... Wait a minute here. Wait a minute. Yeah. Well, it looks like that... Things may heat up a little. Now, this story is not exactly new, but sort of interesting. The former leader of the New Black Panther Party, and there's been several of those leaders in the last several years, said his group will build up an army in the new year to battle with police, and said there will be events that are going to seem tragic to white America, may even shock our own consciousness. On Malik Zulu Shabazz's radio program, he called on his followers to build up an army. Right now, it's time for us to build up those corps, those troops. It's time to get strong. It's time for lifting weights and working out and going to the gun range and all that. Among the things that will shock consciousness is the murder of police officers. WND.com is reporting. Quote, sadly, because America won't do justice to black people, more and more people are going to lose balance and go off. And so we're going to have funerals. Wow. Mike Brown gonna have funerals. Eric Garner in New York, unquote, Shabazz said. All over the country put on their dress blues and have their funerals too. It's a hell of a day. In this hour, unquote. Shabazz is a violent racist terrorist. Even the Southern Poverty Law Center calls him a racist black nationalist with a long and well-documented history of violently anti-Semitic. Well, that's what did it. That's what did it. He's critical of the Jews. So that's the only time you can be a black racist. It's this type of person that President Obama appeared and marched with as he campaigned for the president in Selma, Alabama in 2007. Wow. Showed a picture of them here. In fact, during the 2008 campaign, Obama's website proudly proclaimed his support from the new Black Panther Party. There you go. So what is Shabazz expecting from the President Obama as he prepares for his race war in 2015? Well, let's see here. I think, is that it? I guess that's all. Somehow that article got cut off. There you go. Better start preparing. Go out and buy a bunch of guns, men. Because there's going to be hell to pay when Shabazz comes around. Well, wouldn't you know it. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, otherwise known lovingly as Nitwit, has announced the start of a construction of a fence along Israel's border with Jordan after calls for Tel Aviv to take in Syrian refugees. Isn't that like the old boys? Netanyahu, Nitwit, said on Sunday that he would not allow Israel to be submerged by a wave of illegal immigrants and terrorist activists. Well, what's sauce for the goose doesn't seem to be sauce for the gander. Israel is not indifferent to the human tragedy of Syrian and African refugees. Bullshit. But Israel is a small country, very small, without demographic or geographic depth. That is why we must control our borders, he said in a weekly cabinet meeting, according to his office. Well, but you like to tell everybody else in the world how they should do things, huh? Well, as long as they do it, follow your orders, why not, huh? The new 30-mile or 30 km fence will be a continuation of a 240-kilometer barrier that already runs along the Egyptian border. Israel also has a fence that runs along the Syrian frontier through the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights and through the occupied West Bank. Well, how about that? Netanyahu, Nitwit, said further barrier work was being planned. We will, as much as possible, surround Israel's border with a sophisticated security fence that will allow us to control our borders. Well, that's okay. Just don't do it in the United States. Official figures show 45,000 refugees are in Israel now, almost all from Eritrea and Sudan. Most of those not in detention live in poor areas of southern Tel Aviv. You mean there's poor areas in Israel? I can't believe it. Where there have been several protests against them. Protests? God's chosen people protesting, these poor people just trying to find a better life. Rights groups say thousands of African asylum seekers have been coerced into voluntary departures. That's a clever use of words there. Have been coerced, forced into voluntary departures. Now get out of here, Rastas. We don't want you in our kosher land. Well, I see that pro-Israel campus groups are worried about the Iran deal debate, that it will end in anti-Semitic hate fest. Well, that's interesting. Sometimes it's best to be a little quiet. Well, good old Joe's got Israel's back again. Officials in Washington plan to meet with Israeli counterparts to discuss how the U.S. can ensure Israel's military advantage over its enemies. Vice President Joe Biden said Wednesday, U.S. officials said such a meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Nitwit was already in the works. That's interesting. Biden raised the prospect of increased U.S. support. You know what that means, more weapons for Israel, as he sought to allay concerns among American Jews over the nuclear deal with Iran. Also, Biden hosts Jewish leaders for a reception each year ahead of the Jewish High Holy Days. This year's confab took on a heightened significance, with many of the attendees among the most ardent opponents of the nuclear deal. Ad Limig, in front of a few dozen guests at his official residence, Biden said the U.S. was fully, thoroughly prepared to sit down with Israel's intelligence and defense community to ask a simple question, quote, "What do you need?" Then, in his characteristically free-willing style, he turned to an aide and asked, quote, "Have we announced the meeting with the Israelis?" Unquote. It was unclear which U.S. or Israeli officials would be attending this meeting but a senior Obama administration official said that the U.S. discussing possible dates with Israel for a meeting with Nitwick, with a sit-down expected in the coming months. The official wasn't authorized to comment by name and requested privacy. Obama and Nitwick have not met face-to-face since the nuclear deal Obama and the other world leaders struck with Iran sent a deep chill through the U.S.-Israeli relations. In previous years, Obama and Nitwick have held meetings in September around the time of the U.N. General Assembly, but neither the U.S. or Israel have confirmed that such a meeting will take place again this year. Oh, Israel's unhappy. It's unhappy with the United States, yeah. Describing the U.S. commitment to Israel's protection is infallible. Biden said the U.S. had committed to provide more than $7.18 billion in security aid over the next year, as they do every year. He floated the possibility of signing a new 10-year agreement about the U.S.-Israeli security cooperation. But Nitwick's government has been reacting tepidly to that proposal. That's not enough. That's not enough. Out of concern that signing such a deal would suggest Israeli acquiescence to the nuclear accord. You can't buy us. You can't buy us, Nitwick said. You'll have to double that amount, make it about $14 billion. Biden's comments to a room packed with prominent Kike leaders came as the Obama administration works to smooth over recent tensions with Israel. Why should we give a flying fuck about Israel? Oh, I know, all these Christian Zionists around here cry their eyes out if you don't support Israel and all their myths and all their silly Bible stuff. Secretary of State John Kerry, Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, and other high-level officials made sure to attend the reception and provide fellatio to all the Israelis that showed up. As the White House sought to show how seriously it is taking the Israeli and Jewish concerns. There you go. Dig into your pocket, boys and girls. We don't need any new highways. We don't need our bridges fixed. We don't need the sewers, like a guy said the other day. He said down there in Atlanta they had big sewer problems because a lot of the sewers dated from back just after the Civil War. But we don't have any money to fix those things up. We got to give $8 billion every year to Israel. The money alone's enough to make you hate Israel. All the money we poured in there. I think it said $7 trillion since 1948. Boy, that would have fixed a lot of roads in this country, built a lot of schools. You remember the Jew that spilled the goods on all the nukes over there that Israel has? Police on Thursday arrested Mordecai Vanunu, who 30 years ago revealed Israel's nuclear secrets, following an investigation into whether he broke the terms of his release from jail during an interview that he gave with the Israeli television station last week. You know, he was in prison for, I think, 25 years, maybe more. Vanunu was questioned by police, according to Channel 2 in Israel, which aired the interview on Friday. Later Thursday, a magistrate's court judge in Jerusalem sent him to a week's house arrest and ordered him not to use the internet or talk to journalists. Gee, I thought that was a democratic country over there. The investigation was initiated at the request of Shin Bet Security Service earlier this week after a wide-ranging interview in which Vanunu spoke about leaking Israel's nuclear secrets to a British newspaper in 1986 and of being entrapped by the Mossad and brought back to the country to be jailed. Channel 2 said that while all the material broadcast in the interview had been approved by Israel's military censor, the police had asked for a full and unedited footage of the interview, apparently because it was suspected that Vanunu discussed matters he was barred from talking about. I thought they had all that free speech over there at Israel. A former technician at Israel's Dimona nuclear reactor, Vanunu, was released from jail after 18 years in 2004. But the conditions of his parole included significant limitations on his freedom of movement and banned him from giving interviews on various topics. The Friday interview marked a departure from Israel's decades of official nuclear secrecy, in that Israel's military censors permitted Vanunu to speak on primetime television about the nuclear program. A Dimona technician from 76 to 85, Vanunu revealed overwhelming evidence of Israel's nuclear program to Britain's Sunday Times in 1986, including dozens of photographs enabling nuclear experts to conclude that Israel has produced at least 100 nuclear warheads. Vanunu, now 60, is barred from leaving the country. Was interviewed in a friend's apartment in Tel Aviv. He described a gradual process by which he decided over his years working at Dimona that he had an obligation to reveal to the citizens of Israel and the Middle East and the world the nature of what he called the powder keg at Dimona. The quantities, the numbers, the types. Quote, I saw what they were producing and its significance, he said, calling Israel's nuclear program a failure that he had exposed in an apparent critique of Israel's entire nuclear strategy. To this day, Israel has never acknowledged that it has a nuclear arsenal. Well, where's the inspectors, Mr. UN and the United States? How about getting some inspectors in there? Instead, maintaining a policy of nuclear ambiguity while vowing that it would not be the first to use nuclear weapons in the Middle East. I think they would. Because they're crazier than loons. Well, over there in Ukraine, pro-Russian rebel chief on Monday branded the country's leaders miserable Jews in an apparent anti-Jew jibe. Alexander Zakharov, leader of the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, claimed that Kiev's pro-Western leaders are miserable representatives of the great Jewish people, unquote. Quote, I can't remember a time when the Cossacks were led by people who would have never held a sword in their hands, unquote. Zakharov told a press conference in the eastern rebel stronghold of Donetsk in a conference to Ukraine's nationalist forebears, the Cossacks. Ukraine was sort of a Jewish colony way back, too. Russia dumped the Jews into Ukraine. People don't seem to want to talk about that. Zakharov said that the country's historical nationalists would turn in their graves if they could see who was running the Ukraine. Anti-Jew sentiment remains widespread in the Ukraine, where leaders are commonly labeled as Jewish by those seeking to discredit them, probably because of after they dumped all the Jews in there way back around the turn of the last century, they caused so much trouble. The comments by Zakharov, who was flanked by the leader of the neighboring rebel-held region of Luhansk, Igor Ponitsky, were carried live on the Russian news channel Rossiya 24. The rebel leaders on Monday announced a mass call-up aimed at bolstering their forces of 100,000 troops. Very interesting, boys and girls. Very interesting. I almost forgot. our pessimist's guide to history. Let's go back to BC 19. Earthquake destroys Syria. Poor old Syria, they just can't win for losing. A wide area of what is modern-day Syria was rocked by a severe earthquake in 19 BC, killing over 100,000 people. Probably less than have been killed so far in this attempt to get their leader out of there. BC 27, stadium collapses in Rome. Expected to be entertained by grisly gladiator combat, the Romans who packed a newly constructed wooden amphitheater had no idea they themselves would become part of the grim spectacle. They had no way of knowing that the huge wooden theater in Fadania, a town located just outside Rome, had been built by an unscrupulous speculator who tried to save money by failing to install the proper foundation, probably Jewish. Some 50,000 people eagerly crowded into the raised structure before the combat was set to begin. As the seats filled, the pressure on the weak foundation increased until finally the structure collapsed. The sounds of screams and cracking timbers filled the air as tens of thousands fell into a crumbling structure. Some spectators were killed as they struck the ground, others were crushed under the weight of timbers, and still others were battered and crushed by the bodies falling on top of them. Estimates of the casualties vary, but the total dead and injured range from 20,000 to 50,000. Things haven't changed much. This still happens today for the same reason. Oh, here we go. CA 30. In other words, after BC. Jesus crucified, the mythical Jesus. It was a Friday morning in Jerusalem, and the Jesus of Nazareth stood before the Roman procurator of Judea, Pontius Pilate, awaiting his sentence. He had been found guilty of blasphemy and condemned to death for allegedly calling himself King of the Jews. And now, awaiting the order of execution following tradition, Pilate offered to free one of the condemned prisoners, asking the crowd to choose between Jesus and Barabbas, an insurrectionist and murderer. Many of the Barabbas cohorts were in the crowd. However, after they cried loudly for his release, Pilate reluctantly ordered Jesus to be crucified. Roman soldiers took Jesus to a courtyard where they whipped him until he could barely stand, and then mockingly placed a robe over his shoulders and a crown of thorns on his head, derisively hailing him King of the Jews. Jesus was led into, this takes up a whole other page, all this mythology. JesusNeverExisted.com is all I've got to say. Well, I guess that's about it for today on that score. That bugs the hell out of me every time I see this stuff repeated over and over about Jesus being crucified, which is simply an allegory of the sun, the story of the sun. Yep.
When did leaving work on time become an act of courage? It's time to take back our lives.
Can an head for the lead in May? He was back in the pack, way in the pack. Why do you think he is having such success now?
Well, frankly, we've been very successful from the very start. It's just continues to build in momentum. You know, we started out at 4%, then 8%, then 12%, 18%, and now we're tied in, depending on the margin of error, I like to say that we're a little bit ahead of Mr. Trump right now.
Yeah. You know, everyone has been talking about personality, and, you know, Donald Trump has been saying, Jeb Bush, my gosh, he's so low energy, and having those types of discussions. Donald Trump is a marketer extraordinaire, but Dr. Carson is much more soft-spoken than him. I want you to listen to him on this show just last week when I asked him why he is suddenly making a mark in the polls.
They've been doing their homework subsequently and actually getting a chance to hear from my own lips what I've said, as opposed to what others characterize me as saying, which are two completely different things.
So what are you hearing out there on the ground? What is he saying that people like so much?
Well, he's real, he's genuine, he's smart and articulate. And when you ask him a question, he's not a politician. He'll answer the questions directly. I mean, and most importantly, I think what Dr. Carson brings to the table, frankly, is the power of nice.
No, he's doing pretty good in Iowa because of all the Christians out there, the Christian Zionists, and he's appealing primarily to the Christian fundamentalists, just like that fat pig, the ex-governor of Arkansas. What the hell's his name? Every time that guy comes on TV, I want to put a rock through the television. It'll be more fun once we get past this crazy-ass Iowa thing. And Carson the nigger, he's not going to go. He's not going to go, but he's going to get a lot of Christian Zionists behind him, that's for sure. Well, I see that drunken John Boehner House Speaker is having a rare private meeting with the Pope when he visits the Capitol. Well, how about that? I hope that Boehner is sober when he gets there. Or maybe they both ought to just get drunk and have a good time.
On this episode of China Uncensored, toxic products from China are making their way into the United States. Hi, welcome to China Uncensored. I'm your host, Chris Chappell. You know what's my most favorite nation? Communist China! And why not? Sure, it's a totalitarian regime that brutalizes its own people, constantly engages in hostilities with other nations, and is a growing cyber menace that costs the U.S. billions in intellectual property theft, but... I'm sorry, what was I saying? Anyway, thanks largely to the Bill Clinton administration in the 1990s, the United States granted China most favored nation status, which essentially opened wide the door to trade. And what a great deal that was. Imports from China rose dramatically. Now, there were some who weren't happy about this, particularly all the American manufacturers who said they were being undercut by cheaper labor costs in China. But hey, that's free market capitalism, and that's as American as apple pie. By the way, China is now the largest apple producer in the world, so part of your pie is probably made in China. But China has, how shall we say, a less than stunning reputation for quality. Even Chinese officials admit the state of food in China is grim. Of course, here in the United States, we don't have to worry about tainted products from China getting across our borders because we have the Food and Drug Administration looking out for us. Between 2006 and 2010, the FDA blocked 9,000 unsafe Chinese products from entering American borders. According to Consumer Reports, in a four-month period in 2011, the FDA rejected 298 shipments from China that included filthy fruits, cancer-causing shrimp, and poisonous swordfish. Wow! It's a good thing the FDA is keeping such a close eye on imports from a country with a known history of selling tainted goods. What's that, Shelley? The FDA inspects less than 1% of all products seeking entry into the United States? So if there's already thousands of tainted goods from China in a less than 1% sample, how much is slipping through? I can't tell you that, but at least I can tell you a few examples. Here are the top 6 tainted exported Chinese products. Number 6, tainted milk. Melamine is a wonderful fire-resistant chemical compound useful in making, for example, plastic dinnerware. Also, when added to diluted milk, it can make it appear in tests as if the milk has higher protein content, which is why Chinese state-owned dairy producer Sanlu Group added melamine to its milk and infant formula. It's like when you steal from your parents' tequila bottle and replace the missing amount with water. Only instead of water, you add rubbing alcohol. No one will be the wiser, right? So anyway, in China, 6 infants died from melamine poisoning, and an estimated 300,000 got sick. That's partially because it happened just ahead of the 2008 Olympics. So, naturally, authorities covered it up for as long as they could. But melamine contamination also ended up in exports, including in what used to be one of my favorite Chinese candies. Yes, melamine-tainted white rabbit candies showed up in Connecticut. And melamine was an even bigger problem in South Korea, where certain varieties of M&M and Kit Kat bars had to be recalled after some of them tested positive for melamine, even though the companies said the levels of melamine were totally safe. Number 5. Tainted pet food. Why stop at milk when you can add melamine to wheat gluten too? I mean, what's not to love about melamine's magical fake protein boosting powers? Except that in 2007, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration received reports that about 8,500 dogs and cats had died after eating tainted pet food. But let me make this clear. It's not from a Chinese pet food brand. These were American brands, like Nestle Purina and Blue Buffalo. They contained wheat gluten, imported from a Chinese producer, and that gluten contained poisonous levels of melamine. According to U.S. law, if only part of a product is from China, and it was cooked or processed in the U.S., it doesn't have to be labeled as made in China. So buying pet food is kind of like playing a game with your dog or cat. A game of Russian roulette. Number 4. Tainted fish. China produces 62% of the world's farmed fish. And fish farmers there often use dangerous levels of pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides, substances that may be banned in the U.S. So why do they need to use all these chemicals? Because rivers in China look like this. With such unsanitary conditions for fish, no wonder they have to be pumped full of chemicals. Half of all China's lakes and reservoirs are polluted beyond what's safe for human consumption. But fish raised in the same water is good eating. Number 3. Toxic toys. About 3/4 of the world's toys are made in China, and about 1/3 of those may contain heavy metals, according to research by Greenpeace and IPEN in 2013. And I'm not talking about the kind of heavy metal your parents think is poisonous. No, I mean the kind that can cause permanent damage to a child's nervous and immune systems. No, I mean this. Some of these toxic toys from China make their way into America. In 2007, the U.S. had a massive recall of 45 million Chinese toys because they were coated in lead paint. Mattel alone had to recall 9 million. Don't worry, though. The Chinese manufacturers were listening. Most of them stopped using lead. Instead, they switched to other heavy metals like cadmium and arsenic, which have also resulted in recalls. Number 2. Toxic drywall. It seems toxic products from China are something Americans just can't live without, especially when they're living within it. During the housing boom between 2004 and 2007, an estimated 100,000 homes in more than 20 states were built using drywall from China. And guess what? It was toxic! Compounds like carbon disulfide not only erode electrical systems and plumbing, but also make it hard to breathe in your own home. Number 1. Counterfeit pharmaceuticals. Blood is thicker than water. Unless you've been using the blood thinner heparin. China has a huge problem with counterfeit pharmaceuticals. Sometimes they make their way into the United States, where they can kill. In 2008, tainted heparin made by Changzhou SPL, a manufacturing plant in Jiangsu province, killed 81 Americans. And these were only some of the bigger product scandals. So how do you feel about buying products made in China? Or the fact that after so many scandals, we're still importing so much from there? Leave your comments below and be sure to subscribe for more China Uncensored. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell. See you next time. On this episode of China Uncensored, high-speed rail or high-speed fail? Hi, welcome to China Uncensored. I'm your host, Chris Chappell. Forget planes. Trains are the future. I mean, think about it. Would you rather sit in some whirly bird death trap or ride in luxury to your destination, gliding along the countryside in only double the amount of time it would take you to fly there? Well, dreams come true. And China is the little engine that could. Just a few short years ago, China's high-speed rail seemed poised to take over the world. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone wanted a piece of it. U.S. officials like former Chicago Mayor Richard Daley would visit China and practically drool all over that sleek, shiny efficiency of the Chinese system. Daley said he was envious of all the progress China has made and praised their willingness to do it. Yes, we all admire that can-do attitude you can only get in a totalitarian state that doesn't have to deal with objections from, you know, the people who currently live on the land you want to plow a 220-mile-per-hour train through. They're just looking to the future, right, Mayor Daley? Even former Terminator and Governor of California Arnold Schwarzenegger wanted it in. I mean, you can't be a running man forever. Well, all that ended, sadly, after the 2011 high-speed rail crash in Wenzhou, coupled with a hasty attempt to literally bury the evidence. Apparently people were upset by that. That's why the party doesn't like to listen to them in the first place. But it also shone a spotlight on the vast network of high-speed corruption operated by China's railway ministry. They ran the railways and were responsible for regulating them, meaning it regulated itself. And we all know how well that works. It even had its own police force and was a huge base of power for those involved, like former railways minister Liu Zhijun. That is, until he was arrested in 2011 following the train crash and was given a suspended death sentence in 2013 for taking $10 million in bribes. The railways ministry, burdened by $428 billion of debt, was itself dissolved and separated into a transport ministry and a state-owned railways corporation. So that took a little bit of the steam out of that whole China's high-speed rail as a shining example of the future thing. But all that is behind us now. High-speed rail is back, baby. That's because China is considering building a high-speed rail line to the U.S. Mind blown. And I know it's true because I read it in the People's Daily. This rail line would start in northeast China, run through Siberia, cross a 125-mile underwater tunnel under the Bering Strait, then travel through Alaska and Canada before reaching the continental U.S. And it will only take 2 days to travel from Beijing to the U.S., instead of the 12 hours by plane. Now this is what I'm talking about. This is the kind of wacky ambition and complete disregard for the reality of the natural environment that brought us things like the Three Gorges Dam, the world's largest hydropower project that displaced 1.3 million people and is also causing landslides, drought, oh, and earthquakes. Not to mention the South-North Water Transfer Project, where the government is planning to drill almost 2,000 miles of tunnels and canals through places like the Himalayas to move water from the Yangtze River and its tributaries in the south up to the north, based on a single statement made by expert hydrologist Chairman Mao. The good news is, the high-speed rail line from China to the U.S. is only one of four high-speed rail projects currently in the works. China also wants to build a train that runs from London to China, Kunming to Singapore. I'm not sure what the route for this one is. I would imagine it goes through Laos, Thailand, and Burma, places that all have great relations with China, and Germany to Urumqi. I've always wanted to go from Germany to Urumqi. And what with that lunar rover up there, fingers crossed about that Beijing moon rail line. But it seems like some in China are feeling a little defensive about these ambitious rail projects after hundreds of English-language media outlets picked up the story. So the China Daily published this opinion piece, translated from another Chinese state-run media. It acknowledges that the difficulties in capital, technology, geology, engineering, climate, and geopolitics are conceivable. But it says we're missing the bigger picture here. You see, Western forces built the current world order with warships to benefit themselves, which just isn't fair. So now, developing countries will build a new world order with trains, because many countries will have to cooperate to make these high-speed rail lines a reality, and since cooperation between China, Russia, and the U.S. has worked out so well when it comes to, say, the Ukraine, Syria, currency, trade, human rights, anything related to the United Nations, and possibly a few other things, I see no problems with this plan. And cooperation will make things fair, or something. That's right, world peace through China's high-speed rail. Thanks for watching this episode of China Uncensored. What do you think of China's high-speed rail ambitions? Let me know in the comments section below, and be sure to check out the Facebook and Twitter page.
I'd recommend you all tune in on that once in a while. Yep, that's the ChinaUncensored.com. They've got it up on YouTube, and it tells you all the bad stuff that you're not hearing from our media about China. Well, at least part of the people in Japan, like the people I met when I was over there, quite racial separatist and quite racist. Tokyo, Ariana Miyamoto was born and raised in Japan and speaks fluent Japanese, but she said most people in her homeland see her as a foreigner. My appearance isn't Asian, she said. but I think I'm very much Japanese on the inside. Miyamoto, 21, was born to a Japanese mother and a Nigger American sailor who right away left Japan when she was a child. Isn't that the way it goes? In Japan, she's considered a hafu, half Japanese. Some people prefer the term daburu to signify double heritage, but Miyamoto says she's not offended by the word hafu. Quote, "I don't think the equivalent word for hafu exists overseas." Well, let's see, what would we say over here? Mestizo in Mexico, that's different races all in one. But in Japan, you needed to explain who you are, she said. In March, she became the first half-black, half-Japanese woman to be named Miss Universe Japan. Many people in Japan cheered, tweeting messages such as, "She represents Japan, being hafu is irrelevant." But others complained on social media that she didn't deserve the title. "I don't mean discriminate," one post read, "but I wonder how a hafu can represent Japan," another person tweeted. "I didn't know Miss Japan doesn't have to be pure Japanese. What a shock. I ran for Miss Japan expecting some criticism, so it wasn't such a big surprise for me," Miyamoto said. "But of course, those kinds of comments don't make me feel good, so I try my best to turn them into positive motivations." She said she has heard those kinds of comments since childhood, when she was constantly bullied and even called koranbo, the Japanese equivalent to the nigger word. Some children threw garbage at her for refusing to swim. Let's see here. I gotta move this down a little bit. Hold on. There we go. They refused to swim with her in the same pool. "I didn't cope at all," she said. "I didn't tell my parents or my friends. I was the type who just kept it inside me." Yeah. After spending 2 years in her teens with her father in rural Arkansas, jeez, what a culture shock, Miyamoto returned to Japan and dropped out of high school. Then one day a close friend, also a hafu, killed himself. Inspiring her to raise awareness about the challenges of mixed-race children can face in Japan. And she entered the pageant looking for a way to speak out. Quote, "I would like to do my best for people who are having a hard time as hafu, half-breeds," she said. "I'd also like to become someone who can encourage Japanese people with some sort of complex and who are hurting and considering suicide because of it," unquote. Hafu account for a small portion of Japan's population. Most Japanese are not race mixers. According to Japan's Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare, approximately 36,000 children with a non-Japanese parent are born every year in the country, accounting for about 3% of the births, which most can be laid to the United States military. But with the rise in intermarriage, their numbers are growing. Over the last 20 years, there's been a doubling of the percentage of population that's foreigners, said Jeff Kingston, director of Asian Studies at Temple University. In Japan, 1 out of 30 Japanese babies who are born have mixed parents. You see how the virus grows and grows. Let me see here. Where am I at? It slipped. Oh, here we go. Hafu are making their mark in a country where fitting in is often referred to as sticking out. Immigration is restricted to a trickle, and the idea that all Japanese belong to the same race runs strong. Quote, "There are many Japanese who believe in the purity of the Japanese culture and traditions," Kingston said. Yeah, and I ran into a lot of them over there. I was very pleased. And they have this imagined Yamato race. Everybody in the archipelago comes from the same blood pool, the same DNA. Now anybody who seriously researches Japanese history knows that this is a myth? There's the Jewish answer. Some biracial Japanese are finding fame, such as Anthony, a half African American, half Japanese comedian, and Sari Kikita, an Italian Japanese model advertising for Japanese department stores. There's Jews behind all of this, you realize. She's the face of the campaign called Japan Census, which places the importance on Japanese traditions and cultures. Ian Herman, 16, is a half-boo whose father is American. Teased as a child for being white, he got into fistfights and defended himself against other children with his umbrella. Well, at least he didn't pick up a gun. I feel it a bit offended because I'm living in Japan, but I'm not treated as a Japanese person, he said. I'm treated like a half-breed, which I am. I've been raised Japanese. I eat a bowl of rice in the morning and miso soup because my mom would make me Japanese food. He added that he is also hyped with cornflakes. You gotta watch that cornflake stuff. Eventually, Herman turned to rap music. Hey, there you go. As a way of expressing himself. Now he's really becoming culturally fit. It's fine to be different as long as you have your own pride, like no one can stop you, he said. Girls love hafu. They like bastards. Racial bastards. The girls like it. The most intermarriages in Japan are between Japanese men and women from other Asian countries, including China, the Philippines, and South Korea, according to the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare. Hafu with a Korean or black parent tend to have the toughest time in Japan, according to Megumi Nishikura, a half-Japanese, half-Irish American filmmaker who co-directed the 2013 documentary Hafu. There's an unspoken racial hierarchy inside and outside the Hafu community, she said. If you're half white, you're considered to be the ideal hafu. She added that she has heard some people in Japan refer to Asian mixed Japanese as zanen, or disappointing hafu. Joe Takami, 24, spent part of her childhood hiding her Korean last name from her classmates and pretending she was completely Japanese. Quote, Japanese people tend to say American half-breeds or half-foo are awesome, she said. But in my experience, when people hear about Korean half-foo, about half of them react negatively. For example, she said, if any men she dates don't like it, the relationship ends. Takami said that while Korean music, food, and culture have some fans in Japan, some of the negativity towards people like her is rooted in Japan's troubled relations with its Korean neighbors. I can attest to that by my Japanese hosts when I was twice in Japan. They said, I said, how can you tell the difference between Japanese and the Koreans? And they said, we can spot them a block away. And in recent years, small but vitriolic anti-Korean rallies organized by the right-wing group Zeto Kukai, probably some of my friends I met while I was over there, have been held in Japan. As the 2020 Tokyo Olympics approaches, and the pressure on Japanese government has risen to curb such hate speech, the rallies have abated. See, we can't have anybody speaking the truth because that might cause us to lose face and money. Miyamoto said her country still has a long way to go to embrace diversity. We got to get more niggers in here. Put more U.S. Army Navy bases in Japan. That's the way to do that. The biggest race-mixing outfit in the world, the United States military. She is already making big strides for black half-breeds by challenging the widespread view that lighter skin is more beautiful. Well, perfectly honest, a pure Japanese, in many cases, the women are whiter than white women in this country. I mean, white, if you walk down the street, it's really something. And she has advice for other young people who feel that they're not accepted because of their half-breed background. It's okay to be who you are, she said. There isn't another of you out there, and it's no fun when everybody's the same. No fun when everybody's the same? She added, "Believe in yourselves and don't care too much about what other people say." Yeah, you can take that to the bank. Not. Yeah, righto. I'd like to interview my friends over there in Japan, see what they got to say about this. Even the Hebrews call a bastard a mumser. How about that? You know? In Israel, I didn't see hardly any race mixing going on. You were either a little darker Sephardic or you were Ashkenazi. But I didn't see a lot of, you don't see a bunch of Jewish women with niggers. I don't remember seeing one. I bet you didn't know the UN had a committee on elimination of racial discrimination or separation on Friday called on the Netherlands to revamp its Black Pete Christmas tradition in which white people wear blackface because many see it as a vestige of slavery. The comments will stoke an already heated debate on the custom described as harmless piece of fun by defenders but condemned by other groups as employing offensive stereotypes. Well, why wouldn't they say that was a good stereotype? Why do they automatically assume it's a bad stereotype? I mean, isn't that racial in itself? Prime Minister Mark Rutte quickly dismissed the recommendation, saying it was not the government's job to shape folklore, which makes him immediately a what? A racist. The more they try to stomp out racial separation, the more people are attracted to it. Folk traditions, come on. What Christmas songs you should sing, how you celebrate Christmas and Easter. This isn't what politics is about, he told reporters in The Hague. The Geneva-based UN committee, which does not have the power to enforce its recommendations, said that the Dutch government should work to get rid of negative racial stereotypes in the depiction of Black Pete, an assistant to a white St. Nicholas. Well, and then if you keep him out, if you say no more of that, then they'll say you're racist because you're not letting Santa Claus parade his slave around. You can't win with these people. The stereotypes are experienced by many people of African descent as a vestige of slavery. Well, they should be reminded that they have been slaves for a long time. They need to be reminded that they might return someday if they're not good little nigglets. And that's it for today, 14:05. I'll be back tomorrow on Freya's Day, and we'll see what we can dig up.